Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Filmcast, a podcast about movies. I'm David Chen, and like Coyote vs. Acme, this podcast is also about one regular person surrounded by cartoon characters. But I'm going to let you decide who you think that is. But I think we all know. Joining me today is Devendra Hardwar.
We have a movie. Now I can't wait for the Coyote and Roadrunner podcast. It'll sound amazing.
And Jeff Cannata.
If we're talking prosecutions, I finally want to get Gargamel on war crimes.
Those are, of course, all vague and oblique references to the fact that today on the podcast, we're going to be discussing Coyote versus Acme, the movie they tried to stop you from seeing. The movie they almost killed. Now it's back. It's number two at the box office this weekend. Doing pretty well for itself. I'm really excited that we can finally dive in after this movie was saved from near certain oblivion. Of course, before we get to that, we've got some what we've been watching for you and some movie news. There's been some really, really, really sad and upsetting movie news over the course of last week.
It's rough out
Multiple
there.
Beloved fixtures of our pop culture have passed away, including specifically the top of mind for me are obviously Dolly Parton, Tim Curry, and Peter Cullen, the latter of whom continued working until the end. You know, I was watching Invincible, and he's amazing in that show.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, these are titans of the industry. Tim Curry especially hits particularly hard. If you're like me, you were completely terrified in your childhood by Tim Curry's portrayal of Stephen King's titular character, It. Boy, did that character give me extreme nightmares.
I think you mean Pennywise the Clown, but yeah.
That's what I mean.
Not, yes. Come not, on. What kind of a fan are you?
It's
not It. Wow. Listeners,
wow.
I am sorry for what just happened. We're better than
you know
this.
How many subscribers we just lost, Dave?
I know. So many.
But no, Tim Curry.
Pennywise
always
the Clown.
Terrifying.
Right. Pennywise the Clown. It was the miniseries on TV. It was like, I remember watching it and thinking,
yeah.
Should this be on TV? Like, as a child, it's like, this is so scary and upsetting. This probably shouldn't be on TV. Yeah. And he was amazing in it. He brought his A game to that role, as well as to many other roles, ranging from Home Alone 2 to Command and Conquer, and obviously amazing in the film Clue. Anyway.
Not since Jack Nicholson played the titular character, The Shining.
Oh man!
Anyway,
I don't want to sully Tim Curry's memory. There are not two films that have had more of an impact on me than Clue and the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Mm-hmm. Both of those had massive, massive impact on my life. Clue, I still quote near daily. Had a huge, huge imprint on my comedic sensibilities as a kid. I watched Clue over and over and over again on VHS growing up. And his totally unhinged performance in that is a thing of beauty. You know, by the end, when he, as the butler, is running back and forth, shoving people, trying to explain who done it in the various three endings, it is just magnificent. He is magnificent. I love that movie so very much. And the Rocky Horror Picture Show, I mean, I performed live numerous times growing up in the Bay Area, went to see it in Berkeley a bunch of times, and then we decided we were going to do it ourselves. I was working at the movie theater. We convinced the owner of the movie theater to let us do Rocky Horror. We performed it in front of the screen. It was a huge sort of... At the age that I was exposed to that, which was like 17, 18, you know, opening my eyes to sexuality and this kind of madcapped musical theater exploration of mores and taboos. Like it was a watershed moment in my life. To sort of be exposed to that, to memorize that movie and see his performance in it and just being so comfortable in his own skin at a time when I was not comfortable in my own skin. it's, you know, he had a huge impact on my life and I think is an extraordinary talent. I mean, there's not a thing he touched that he didn't make better. You know, even like Command and Conquer, you know what I mean?
Which just is legendary popping up.
Yeah. Audiobooks, like he did audiobooks. He did it, like every single thing he touched, he lent his talent to, he made better.
He did a lot of voice work, the villain in Ferngully too, like just an iconic voice, but also a really iconic face. I just rewatched Muppet Treasure Island with my kids and just seeing he's Long John Silver in that one. And like, he's just kind of a scamp, kind of like a little, you know, trickster. And my daughter was like really enamored with his face. She was like, oh, he's like a Muppet. He's like, just, he's so expressive. And that's really it. Like that's, that face, that voice in everything. I think of Clue a lot. I think of like freaking Loaded Weapon. Remember Loaded Weapon? Like
amazing
he would just
film.
Be silly.
Amazing film.
Unafraid to be silly, unafraid to be like raunchy, unafraid to just be weird. And I always love that about him.
You know, if we're correcting each other about minutia, I believe the correct title is Loaded Weapon 1. Perhaps even National Lampoon's Loaded Weapon 1 is a better way to describe that movie.
Yes. Not since the titular character in Stephen King's The Pet Sematary.
Also, shout out to Peter Cullen, who made the Transformers movies about Michael Bay's Transformers movies about 20 to 30% better single-handedly.
True. Just by being there.
They should have been otherwise.
And which is exactly how good they were, 20 to 30%.
He added 30% to the Rotten Tomatoes score of the Transformers movies, which, by the way, coincidentally, had a 30% Rotten Tomatoes score. Anyway.
I have to do my Peter Cullen impression because it's one of the few impressions that I do. Autobots, roll out!
It's pretty good, Amazing.
Jeff.
Pretty
Jeff, good. I think there is an opening for all Peter Cullen-esque voices now. So that voice, as a kid, I grew up watching Toonami on Cartoon Network, where they premiered a lot of anime, a lot of different things. And he had the announcer voice. So he was the one introducing Dragon Ball Z movies, Gundam Wing, to a whole generation of kids. Like, probably didn't even know that he was Optimus Prime. Like, just like, he is an authoritative voice in, like, geeky culture. Truly love that man. People were sharing clips. All just his announcement clips feel epic from the 90s. And that was just ads for Cartoon Network, you know?
Yeah. And then, of course, Dolly Parton. I mean, my God, it's hard to wrap your head around a life as well lived as hers seems to have been, and just beloved by every person that encountered her, and literally made the world better with her success and her wealth, and you know, just a beacon. A North Star for the rest of us to follow as far as, you know, goodness and kindness and generosity. And also a freaking kick-ass songwriter, just an amazing songwriter. It's been wonderful seeing my 8-year-old daughter discover her. She said, I have this video my wife sent me. I was gone all weekend running the relay. And my wife sent me a video of my daughter. They talked about Dolly Parton at school. So she learned about Dolly Parton at school, which is just awesome. I love the fact that the schools did that. And my daughter said, I'm a Dolly Parton fan now. I'm a Dolly Parton fan. I love Dolly Parton. So we've been listening to all her music on loop. Just because my daughter
Now time to watch The
it.
Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. Come on, Henny. We're going to watch. Daddy, what's a whorehouse?
That's a little whorehouse in Texas.
It's a great
just
movie.
Amazing woman. And, you know, didn't take herself too seriously, you know, always was self-deprecating and did so much to help others. But man, if you listen to her songs now, they are so sophisticated, so smartly written. I saw a wonderful post on social media that said, you know, the fact that she wrote I Will Always Love You and Jolene in the same day. Somebody wrote, you know, writing I Will Always Love You and Jolene on the same day is like painting the Mona Lisa and writing Jolene on the same day. Thought that was pretty good.
It's pretty good. Also,
I do think as FYI, that is an urban legend. I don't believe
that's apocryphal and not true.
Yeah, that's apocryphal. Yeah, but
I know I saw a lot of people reference it. But hey, Nine to Five, amazing movie. Go watch Nine to Five.
Great
Best Little Horror House in Texas is a lot of fun, even though it's a musical, kids. But it is a lot of fun.
And just listen to the lyrics to Nine to Five, the song. Mm-hmm. They could not be more relevant to today. Could not be more relevant to what people are talking about. Right the second.
It's amazing. Like she was an example of how rich people could also be rich, right? Like that's a thing that I think the tech titans and the billionaires today have completely lost the plot on, right? They're all about accruing as much power and wealth as they can. She has been donating. She is a force for philanthropy. She was a freaking unnamed producer on Buffy the Vampire Slayer because she heard the producer, like the female producer on that show, was being paid less than her colleagues. She just cut her a check. Never got a credit for it. But just all these good stories. The COVID vaccine. The books that they send out to kids around the South and I guess all over the world now. Like it's a force for goodness that we've lost here.
Yeah, I mean, even just doing one of those things would be extremely impressive. Right? But I Will Always Love You. That an iconic song that has lasted for generations. If you have one of those on your resume, it's like you're done. You don't even need to do anything else. And the fact that she has multiples is really, really impressive. It's been amazing to see the variety of people that have come out in support of, or you know, like revealing their fandom for her after her passing. It just obviously is worldwide and truly, truly impressive and a sign of a life well lived. So
I'd also want to recommend, listen to Jada Boomrod's podcast series, Dolly Parton's America, because her father was friends. His father was friends with Dolly Parton. That's how the COVID vaccine kind of got started. Like just her cutting a check for that thing to help with the research there. That's also a great series about why she is so great and why her songs are so sad too. Like she makes some sad ass songs. I believe that's the title of one of the episodes.
All right. Well, anyway, those are some thoughts on some people who have passed recently. Moving on, before we get to what we've been watching, I did want to mention, guys, there is going to be a Days of Thunder 2.
I thought we got that already. I thought we just watched that movie. It was called F1. F1 trademark, the movie.
Tom Cruise and Anne Hathaway posted a social video this weekend announcing that in summer of 2028, June 2nd specifically, Days of Thunder 2 will be released. It will be filmed for IMAX, also available in other premium large screen formats. Jonathan Levine to direct the movie.
Okay.
Gotta say,
all right.
Not a combination of words. You know, Days of Thunder 2, Tom Cruise, Jonathan Levine, Anne Hathaway would not have predicted those at all.
I like Jonathan Levine quite a bit, but not an action guy, right? The director behind The Whackness.
Yeah, 50-50. Right. Like more of a comedy guy.
Anne Hathaway is more of playing, like a drama guy, yeah.
Anne Hathaway's playing his daughter, right?
I hope so. But the picture does not look like that.
I don't think
Listen,
so.
Jeff, his name is Cole Trickle. He's got game, right? Cole Trickle's got game.
So what do you guys think about this? I feel like when Top Gun Maverick was announced, it's like, okay, like I get that.
Yeah.
I understand that, right? Like tons of people are fans of Top Gun. Tons of people are fans of Top Gun, right? And so the idea of a Top Gun legacy sequel is like, oh yeah, that makes total sense. Days of Thunder? Like, does anyone long after Days of Thunder?
I don't think it matters. I think the only guy that's proven that he can do a legacy sequel.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Let the man cook.
Yeah. That's how you feel.
Here's the thing. We let the man cook. We let the man cook with a whole spy franchise, right? And he let that thing burn to shit. So maybe he needs some friends who are like, Tom.
He cooked
buddy,
it to a crisp, Jeff.
maybe you don't need to do this. Days of Thunder, is that a beloved film? Or was it always thought of as a joke copy of Top Gun, right? It never had love. I don't think it has a huge fan. I've never had love for that movie. So, you know, Why do it's like, yeah, re-cooking a turd, reheating a turd. I don't know what you get out of that.
So Devendra is a little less optimistic than you, Jeff.
No, I don't know, man. I think it's I agree that Days of Thunder was never my favorite movie, nor do I think it's anyone's favorite movie.
No.
And I also agree that if F1 didn't exist, this would be more interesting. Because,
sure, right.
You know, yeah. I thought F1 was excellent.
What is Days of Thunder going to say about F1 racing?
That it's going to be Tom Cruise that like you've never seen before. Not already say,
well, it's right? not going to be F1
yeah.
race.
Yes, it's going to be, yeah, it's gonna be NASCAR.
NASCAR, race. Yeah. But he's, it's going to be Tom Cruise like you've never seen before, going very fast.
So a less interesting version of racing.
Yeah, he's going to be really driving.
than F1.
Yeah.
I mean, Brad Pitt was really driving also, supposedly.
The only way to do Days of Thunder is to make it a Talladega Nights crossover. Bring back Ricky Bobby and Cole Trickle. That's a movie. That's cinema. Okay.
And get Brad Pitt in there. Pitt in there. Why not?
Yeah.
What's the name of that character? He's got a funky name too.
Do you guys think it might be like awkward? Because Nicole Kidman was in Days of Thunder, right? And so she's obviously not going to be in this one.
Yeah. It's a lot of awkward
You think
things,
Anne Hathaway right? called her up and was like, hey.
Hey, are you cool with this?
She's probably used to the weirdness. We cool? By this point.
We cool if you do this? If I do this? Yeah, I don't know. I'd feel weird.
Yeah, Brad Pitt played Sonny Hayes. Sonny Hayes, Cole Trickle.
We used to have names. We used to Ricky name Bobby. Characters. Ricky Bobby. Ricky Bobby fits right in.
All in the same movie. There you go.
Yeah. That'd be amazing. That'd be amazing.
And let Adam McKay do that from his like the stuff he's been on recently, because Talladega Nights actually has pretty good racing scenes too. So, you know.
I mean, okay, what I am looking forward to is they're gonna do some crazy ass shit with like the IMAX cameras mounted on NASCAR vehicles or something like that. That's gonna be like cool.
Yeah.
You know, I'm gonna be
Jonathan Levine's gonna tap into all of his action experience.
Tom's moving cameras drive,
very
baby.
Quickly. He's gonna hire like Chris McQuarrie to do second unit or something on this one. Is my guess, right? Like, I bet that's what's gonna happen. Like, very closely at who is hired to be second unit director on Days of Thunder 2.
Because that's all Chris McQuarrie can do now. He's working on something. He's
No. But it's gonna be like it'll be visually interesting. I think at least
I'm just excited for Tom to keep going, baby. You know. Born on the 4th of July 2, Rain Man 2. Let's do them all.
I think we all know what's going on here, which is that those initial screenings of Digger went extremely poorly. And he's like, okay, can't do the auteur thing anymore. Need to go back to what the people want. Days of Thunder 2.
Digger is going to be an event. Jeff, you've not even seen what's going on with Digger.
It's pretty nuts, Jeff.
It's pretty nuts. Yeah.
I'm excited.
That's actually, I'm more excited for Digger.
Oh, 100%.
From a director I generally hate from the idea of like, Days of Thunder 2.
That it is 1,000% more exciting, Digger, to me. Even if it's a complete and total failure. He's going for it, man. This is like, we haven't seen this much Tom Cruise acting talent since his performance in P.T. Anderson's Magnolia, really. Like, this is like of that level of performance, I think.
I think this is more like a Tropic Thunder-esque role, but we'll see.
Actually, that's true.
It's very much exactly very Tropic Thunder.
That is very good, Devendra.
What if he made a whole movie about, like, that character or that sensibility? But McQuarrie, by the way, is doing King Conan, so that'll be interesting. Untitled Tom Cruise SpaceX project. I don't know what's going on there. Is he going to ride a rocket? And then a World War II thing with Henry Cavill and Tom Cruise. So we'll see.
What if this was the same movie as one of those? Think about
Make it. Make it a SpaceX movie.
Yes, this is a SpaceX movie. All right. Anyway, that is some of the stuff that's going on in the world of film news. Let's take a break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more What We've Been Watching right after this.
This episode of the Filmcast is brought to you by Hims. Hey, you've got weight loss goals. And just because summer is coming to an end doesn't mean you don't still have time to actually hit them. Weight loss by Hims is designed to support you every step of the way. And now, Hims offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen, so you can lose the weight and keep it off. With Wegovy at Hims, you can lose up to 20% of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep the weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first ever GLP-1 pill for weight loss, so there's no needles needed. Through Hims, everything happens online. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. And if prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Hims makes hitting your goals seamless by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and in-app lifestyle and nutrition support like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hims makes it simple to find a weight loss approach that fits into your world and your wallet, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. Are you ready to reach your goals? Visit Hims.com/filmcast to get a personalized, affordable plan that gets you. That's Hims.com/filmcast. Hims.com/filmcast. Weight loss by Hims is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit Hims.com.
All right, folks, time to talk about what we've been watching this week. And this week, Jeff Cannata and I had a chance to see Ridley Scott's newest film starring Jacob Elordi, The Dog Stars. This is a movie that takes place in a post-apocalyptic America. And that's really all the trailers had to say about this one.
Based on a novel.
Based on the novel.
Beloved, right. I believe.
Beloved novel. Jeff Cannata, I'm going to go with you first because I already know how you feel about this one. What do you think of Ridley Scott's The Dog Stars out in theaters this weekend?
Wait, did you say you're going with me first because you already know how you feel about it? Is that
what you
said?
I already know how you feel about it.
Oh, yeah.
So we can open with a nice positive note.
Well, I don't hate it like you hate it.
that's right.
That's the key is I don't love it. I don't love it, but I did not hate it.
I don't hate it either, to be fair. Like, I just think it's not
sounded like you hate it. You wanted to call it The Dog Shits.
That is not accurate, Jeff.
That's what you said to me.
That is not accurate. I did not say
it's not a widely beloved film.
That is a lie, what Jeff just said. Okay, go ahead.
So this movie, I don't know why Ridley Scott wanted to make this, frankly. I don't know honestly what this movie is about.
Yeah.
I don't know what it has to say.
Baffling.
It's a, like, you know what this movie really is? It's a slice of life dystopian movie.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like a day in the life of dystopia. It's a very strange film.
And it's like, do I need to go to the movies to see that, guys?
Yeah.
Aren't we living that in many ways, you know?
But like the slice of lifiness of it, I found to be kind of charming in that you're just sort of hanging out with these people who are living that Last of Us life, baby. It's Ridley Scott doing The Last of Us.
Yes.
Which, you know, I guess tune in for that because he's still, I think, very talented director. There's some really beautiful shots here. This is a pilot. Jacob Elordi plays a pilot. So you get a lot of these kind of spectacular, just hanging out in the sky grants. I saw it in IMAX, and there's like these moments where it kind of opens up in IMAX and it looks grand. And I really enjoy seeing Guy Pearce in anything. Guy Pearce looking rugged and cool. He's got this kind of silver fox beard going on and a killer cowboy hat. Whenever I see an awesome actor in a cowboy hat, I wonder how many cowboy hats the prop department tried on them or the wardrobe department tried on them before they picked that cowboy hat. You know, it's the same thing with sunglasses. I know a wardrobe department, if you see an actor in sunglasses in a movie, they tried on 87 pairs of sunglasses to get the perfect. And same thing with a cowboy hat. They found Guy Pearce, the perfect Guy Pearce cowboy hat. Anyway, that's probably more information than you needed about that aspect of the movie.
Have I told you about like that time I went to the cowboy hat store and they're like, my head was too big? Did I tell you about that story?
I mean, that's a refrain that you refer to a lot. Yeah. The size of your dome.
I'm sorry if I've told the story before, but we were at a music festival, and there's people selling hats at these booths. And I went to one of the booths and I was like, hey, I've always wanted to try out a hat. And they measure your skull, right? They like measure your like circumference or whatever. And they measured it and they're like, oh, this is like, and I don't remember what the number was. It's like, oh, this is like a 47, you know, or whatever the number was. And I'm like, okay, so do you have any hats in that? And it's like, oh no, we don't see hats that, like, cause what they do is they take old hats and they like refurbish them, right? So they're like, oh, we only see those come around like once or twice a year.
We need like two hats to make one of those hats.
And I left feeling very sad and dejected. Okay, Jeff, back to our review of The Dog Star.
Anyway, my favorite part of this movie is Josh Brolin. Josh Brolin is awesome in this movie. He's not in it a lot, but when he is in it, he's awesome. I will let you talk. I don't understand the Jacob Elordi thing still. I still don't understand the fact that he's a star at all.
Very, very mumbly, very mumbly,
yes,
in this one.
As he is always.
I would say in general, yeah.
As he always is. Very mumbly. I don't understand it. He's a tall drink of water. I get that. But Margaret Qualley's in it. I know you like her. Qualley, I like her as well. This movie gets completely unhinged in the third act in a way that like you expect to add up to something and does not. But it goes places, man. You think you're in this, like, you think you're in one kind of movie,
right?
And then all of a sudden you're in a completely different kind of movie. This movie feels very influenced by video games to me. I don't know. I found enough to like that I did not feel like my time was wasted. I enjoyed aspects of this. There's a lot of actors that I like that are doing interesting work, and also Jacob Elordi. And then
Jesus Christ.
So I know you, but you were, tell me why you hated it.
Imagine you're playing Days Gone or Last of Us, and then all of a sudden you're playing BioShock.
That's exactly what happens.
That's basically what the experience of watching the video.
It's like an episode of Fallout intruded on your perfectly reasonable slice of life dystopia.
I thought the first third of Dog Stars was really good. Like,
yeah,
even the opening credits I thought were incredible, where you're basically just following Jacob Elordi's character as he lives a day in the life of and watch like all the stuff he needs to do to survive in this post-apocalyptic environment in which some kind of flu / virus has wiped out a huge portion of the world's population. But man, I mean, this movie compares so poorly to a movie like 28 Days Later or 28 Years Later, The Bone Temple, which we just reviewed not too long ago.
Agreed.
Right? Which is like, that is incredible.
Much better movie.
Right? That like
has
something to say. Right? Yeah. And it's like beautifully, like visually really interesting. I will say one of the things that The Dog Stars does have is incredibly gorgeous aerial cinematography.
Agreed.
That's supposed to be in Colorado. It's supposed to take place in Colorado.
One of the fun things. I was sitting there watching it at a press screening in Denver.
Right.
And it takes place in Denver.
Right. But I don't think they actually filmed in Denver, did they? Like,
I doubt it.
Because there's like Denver City Hall. It looks nothing like Denver City Hall.
That's correct. Yeah, but it also it says Denver right there. So right? I'm happy. I got
But whatever they shot, whether it's supposed to be Colorado, and it looks plausibly like Colorado. And there's like, I'm going to say of the 2 hour runtime or 1 hour and 45 minute runtime, a good 10 to 15 minutes of the film was aerial photography.
Yeah.
Right. At least. And that stuff is beautiful. So, hey, like, not bad use of IMAX there to go watch The Dog Stars. Unfortunately, nothing else about this movie really works. There's great setup. You're like, oh, I get it. What's going on? But as Jeff Cannata has already indicated, the movie's not really about anything. And it has a very, very bizarre third act that is not indicated. Here's the problem. I was watching the trailer for The Dog Stars. Devendra, you seen the trailer for The Dog Stars?
I have. Yeah, it looks boring as shit. So tell me more.
Well, I was going to say, Jeff, I know you don't watch trailers, but generally what trailers do is they tell you what is going to happen in the movie.
Well, that's why I don't watch them.
Here's the thing, you can't also, it's not going to be everything that happens in the movie, right? It sounds like it's a bit of a surprise. It's what you want from marketing.
But generally the trailer will tell you what the main objective is of the movie. Like, hey, we got to get so-and-so home, or we got to get the key to the blah, you know, we got to get the rabbit's foot, right? Whatever it is, like the trailer will generally tell you like what the main objective or mission or conflict of the movie is going to be. Doesn't need to tell you the whole movie, especially teaser trailers, Jeff, you're missing out. This trailer does not do that.
Well, that's because there is no main goal
right,
in this movie.
There is no main really
issue. It's just
issue.
A day in the life. It's just a like, today this
watching,
happened.
I was watching the trailer. I'm like, why would I go see that? There's no reason to go see that movie. And yet I went to go see it anyway, because Ridley Scott is a very talented director. And you know, Jeff, I think we have to agree, like visually the movie looks pretty good overall.
Yes,
like,
it's great.
It's strange to me that Ridley Scott, I think, is what, 89 years old? That he is he chose to dedicate
I know
some
like,
portion
what about this?
Of his final years to this movie. Like
that seems kind of this seems like a movie anybody could direct, right?
Yeah,
or at least a large swath of people could take a crack at this and maybe have a distinct viewpoint. Everything that I've seen seems like a really vanilla dystopian thing. Why is Ridley Scott doing this? But yeah. Spend your time more wisely.
I agree with that. I don't understand why he was like, I got to make the Dog Stars. Also, I don't understand why it's called the Dog Stars. The title makes no sense whatsoever.
Well, they do kind of explain.
There's
a
dog. There's
yeah.
a dog.
And they look, and he's looking at stars and explaining what they are. And,
oh,
you know,
yeah,
and he's naming them after the dog.
Yeah,
anyway,
I didn't put that together. Yeah. Jacob Elordi was mumbling. I didn't really pay attention. Yeah.
Jeff kind of just blacks out whenever Jacob Elordi is talking.
Fair point. The other thing I was going to say though is there is this sequence that takes place in night vision goggles.
Mm-hmm.
That is badass.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's badass, Dave. You got to admit that. I've never seen anything shot like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wouldn't say it's badass.
Ridley Scott flexing, here's me like adding something to cinema. Like you've never seen a action sequence shot like this, visualized like this. It does this like freaking awesome, like blurry thing. And I think it was sweetened with a lot of CG, but not in a very obvious way, but like, cause you're in this night vision POV and like blood splatters will be like freeze framed, like neon bright. It looks so cool. I thought that was amazing. I thought that sequence was rad.
Yeah, I'm glad you liked it.
I mean,
I'm glad you liked it.
It doesn't matter. It's like there's nothing in it. It's a bunch of non-characters, you know, that end up mattering at all, but still cool visually.
Yeah, still cool visually. That's a great description of our thoughts on the Dog Stars overall. It's fine. It's not bad. It has nothing to say.
That's right.
It looks great. And that, you know, you can tell like Ridley Scott brought like a non Ridley Scott director might have made a movie that looks way worse, feels way less interesting, like visually than this one. But yeah, not a fan. And the movie is performing disastrously at the box office. So kind of a bummer there. But it's something Jeff Cannata and I have been watching. If you want to watch beautiful aerial photography, and or you're a huge Jacob Elordi fan, then I guess you can
you
watch
have
YouTube.
Mercy on your
YouTube
soul.
Is right there. YouTube is right there. You have all those things on YouTube. Yeah.
The Dog Star is out in theaters right now. It's something Jeff Cannata and I have been watching this week. Devendra, you and I had a chance to watch this movie called Buddy, directed by Casper Kelly, the guy who did the Too Many Cooks short on Adult Swim.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of this guy. So Buddy is a film about a Barney-esque unicorn who hosts his own like children's TV show. And then nightmarish things start happening in the universe of the show.
Describing Death to Smoochie?
Perhaps.
It's like a better Death to Smoochie, maybe.
Devendra, and by the way, this movie, I would say, broke out this weekend. It made over $5 million, which I was like, I thought this movie was going to make like less than a million, a few 800,000 or something like that. This movie broke out. Like a lot of people were sickos like you and me, Devendra, went to go see this. What did you think of Buddy, Devendra?
I think buddy's a really interesting concept. It is basically the sort of like too many cooks thing where like you were introduced to this really plain vanilla thing that you've seen before on TV, and it slowly evolves into something a little insane, very much horror, perhaps a little psychotic. I thought this movie was a lot of fun, especially with where it goes, because other people pop up in this film that I was not expecting to see.
Same.
I didn't see the cast list before that, so I was like, oh, same. Interesting. How are, like, we,
whoa,
how are we?
Whoa, I didn't know they were in the movie.
Yeah, synchronize these two plot lines here. But it is interesting. It goes places, and I think it really has a fun, it does a fun thing with like the aesthetic of kids shows, especially the shitty like 90s kids shows. So if you want to like see a twist on that, it is really, this is for like the people who grew up honestly with Barney, or who grew up in that era of kids shows, and then you want to see something a little twisted. I think it is a bit of, it is basically one joke, like it is one idea hammered home all the way. And where in Too Many Cooks that was kind of a surprise, and that was like, oh man, look how far this goes. You know, this is a over 95 minute long movie. I don't even think it fully justifies this timeline. It's really interesting, like they really commit to the bit, but I think the bit is kind of one note to me.
Yeah, I overall liked Buddy. I would, mm-hmm, I say if you liked Too Many Cooks, if you like all those Adult Swim really off-kilter nightmarish shorts, I think you, mm-hmm, will like, you know, the Yule Log one. I think you'll like this. At its best, a movie like Buddy invites you to contemplate the horrors of what this kind of 80s and 90s children-focused television entails, right? Like, if you really sit and think about it, maybe there are some disturbing things about this kind of TV, right? Like,
yeah. Which we've learned about kids programming, by the way, Nickelodeon, the whole history of like big,
oh yeah, shows, absolutely.
Horrible. Absolutely. Horrible treatment for the kids. Yeah,
absolutely. But yeah, beyond that, it's like, to mention what you're talking about, Devendra, why are kids this young? Like, what, mm-hmm, is the story behind the kids this young being in this TV show? Like, how did they come to be in the TV show? Are the conditions through which they came to be there acceptable, humane? There is a kind of conformity that these TV shows encourage. And also, these kids are receiving love and attention from these TV shows, perhaps in a way that they shouldn't be, or perhaps in a way, mm-hmm, that should be provided to them from other more wholesome sources. And like this movie, Buddy, kind of takes those ideas to their extreme. Don't get me wrong, I love Sesame Street and stuff like that. I think it's like extremely valuable and very helpful. But I also think that like
there's a big difference between, I think, what Sesame Street does, which is like nuanced and wholesome and generally kind and sweet, and the Barney shit, which was just like happy, happy song. Let's never challenge kids. Let's like create this false environment that does not resemble reality at all. Sesame Street was deliberately set on like a city street, like to look like a place where, mm-hmm, people live.
Right, right.
And this is like, I think that's always the thing that really bothered me about Barney. My little brother used to watch that. I was way older. But my kids don't watch shit like this. We're doing other things. There's more compelling stuff right now.
Jeff Cannata, do you have an opinion on the whole children's television when it comes to like a Barney or Teletubbies type situation? Like, what is your philosophy on that kind of stuff?
You know, I missed all that. I was a little too old for that stuff. I didn't have kids yet either. So I don't think I've ever really seen an episode of Barney or Teletubbies.
It's horrible,
I
know they were, Jeff.
What?
We have it so good. We have it so good now. And like,
oh,
the Barney era was just horrible.
Yeah.
Right. Like, if you compare like Bluey to like a Barney, right? Like a Bluey, yeah, has, yeah, much more artistry to it.
It has like social, emotional like themes. Like it's trying to tell you something. Even freaking Miss Rachel, who is right now a champion for human rights, like she has more going on than any, yeah, of these things ever did back in the day.
Yeah. And I think YouTube has supplanted that. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's plenty of sort of insipid, sing-songy, you know, vapid television, yeah, for kids on YouTube if they want to.
Now
just
it's
watch
bad CG instead of, yeah, guy in costume. Yeah.
That's right.
Anyway, Buddy, Devendra and I Mostly enjoyed it, although I think you're right, Devendra. Even at a lean like 95 minutes, this did feel like it was a little long. I do think. Yeah.
I think 60 minutes in, I was like, oh, this is great. I love the ideas. Love what you guys got going here. Let's wrap it up, buddy. I got things to do.
Literally, buddy.
Maybe a little more. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a little more engaging.
I think the Barney of today is Cocomelon.
Cocomelon?
Maybe Cocomelon. No, it's Blippi.
Well, yeah, I was going to say Blippi. Isn't
Blippi? Well, Blippi is just doing Pee Wee Herman in a bad badly.
He is doing Pee Wee Herman. Yeah.
I actively dislike. I don't Blippi's let awful. My kids watch Blippi. I'm like, dude, this guy's just ripping off Pee Wee Herman shtick, and then he outsources it to other Blippies.
There's multiple Blippies. No, my kids go back to we do original Pee Wee shit. Yeah.
So your objection to him is that he's ripping off one of the greats and not that it
That's
itself
exactly
is,
right.
He's
compromising the artistic integrity. Go ahead, Devendra.
It's also the most annoying shit in the world. Like his really voice, his like everything about it. Pee-wee was kind of annoying, sure, but also that was kind of the joke. It was all everybody was kind of like in on the joke in a way. And then Blippi is playing it pure. Hate it.
Yeah, Pee-wee knew that you were looking through the looking glass and seeing something grotesque almost. Even though he's doing a kid's show, there's like this kind of surrealism. Blippi is just saccharine and sugary sweet and garbage.
Yeah. And honestly, Buddy is trying to do a bit of that too. It's like, I'm somebody who grew up with Pee Wee's Playhouse and the Pee Wee movies as well. So it's like, I like what you're doing here, Buddy. I get it. Except honestly, we're all building on everything Paul Rubens has done before, honestly.
That is Buddy and is out in theaters right now. Well, Jeff Cannata, as promised, I checked out David Koepp's 1996 film, The Trigger Effect.
Oh my gosh. I love that you watched this. I'm so curious.
I haven't
seen it since 1996.
I did it. And I mean, I just have, first of all, it's just worth noting in general, I have a bias that older movies were better. You know, and like any movie made before 2000, I'll just in general think is like probably better than a recent film. So that does inform my attitude a little bit. I would say this movie is decent.
Oh, that's good to hear.
I overall enjoyed it. And I would say that the point that it is making that society would devolve pretty rapidly if we all lost electricity still holds up today. Still holds up today. Of course, we kind of see that in. Like, it's interesting, this movie kind of depicts the ostensible beginning of an apocalypse, but like the movies we're watching now, the apocalypse, we're way long past that now. Like we're, and to be clear, those movies existed back then too, right? Like, it's not like they never did post-apocalyptic films before The Trigger Effect, but it's rare. Like most of the time when we see like The Last of Us or Mad Max, Fury Road or whatever, they skip over the beginning stage. We're just like right to the end.
Yeah.
And so this is showing what would happen if there was a massive power outage that lasted many days. How would society devolve over time? And it focuses on Annie and Matthew, played by Kyle MacLachlan and Elizabeth Shue, both looking the most attractive that they have ever looked in any film that I've seen them in, I would say. This is them at the height of their powers. And for some reason, by the way, like they invite Elizabeth Shue's character's best friend, played by Dermot Mulroney, to live with them during the blackout, which I'm just like, is this, Jeff, you tell me, you're a little older than me, like, is this something that people would do back then? They'd be like, hey, you're our extremely hot single best friend who clearly has something has the feelings for my wife. He can just come live with us during a blackout when there's nothing to do.
We cared about each other back then, Dave. You know, if the dinosaurs are roaming the streets, we call our neighbor and we find out. Maybe they need to come over and have inappropriate relations with my wife.
Well, no wonder why you didn't like End of Oak Street. The swinging part was missing. So anyway, The Trigger Effect is about like, what happened? So that's just baffling to me. Like, clearly this, like there's a scene when, you know, Elizabeth, she was like, invite, Dermot Mulroney, come stay with us. Clearly I want to have sex with you and you're cool with it, right, Kyle MacLachlan? And he's like, why wouldn't I be?
We're buds. He and I.
Yeah. But But what? Okay, here's a couple of things that I like about the trigger effect. Spoilers for the trigger effect. Okay, so I'm going to spoil the trigger effect. Number one, I was impressed by how this is a movie that largely takes place in small enclosed spaces.
Yeah.
And but then there's like 2 to 3 scenes that happen out in the world. And when he's out in the world, there's like mayhem unfolding, right? Like things are going nuts out there. Like people are breaking laws and swarming the pharmacy and doing all kinds of stuff. And it just made me really appreciate, oh, wow, like, you can be like a low budget movie, but if you put all your budget into like 2 scenes, you can convince people that like there's like this nightmarish thing unfolding outside, and it's like really, really effective. Honestly, 10 Cloverfield Lane, another movie that like does something like that, where like not much happening during the movie, but then, you know, for the brief things where you do see outside, it does convince you, oh yeah, okay, I guess that's what's going on. So I did appreciate that about the movie. And then ultimately, again, spoilers for the trigger effect. I really enjoyed the opening sequence. So what happens in the opening scene is it's one long continuous shot. And basically, you follow this kind of social contagion of, how do I describe this? People being assholes, right? Like, imagine it's like somebody cuts someone off on the road, and then you get cut off on the road, and then you're angry, and then you snap at the cashier at your Target, right? And then that person gets all frazzled, and they go home and they yell at their loved one, and then, you know, and it's like there's just like kind of social contagion of like assholery that I felt like the opening scene did a good job of capturing, and like how we're all kind of connected in ways that we may not appreciate.
Well, you know, last week, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, no, go ahead. You go first, Jeff.
Well, I was going to say, last week, you know, when we were bringing this up, I was giving this movie so much credit because I was like, it's pre-9/11. It's obviously pre-COVID. It's like we hadn't really experienced that stuff yet. And then I realized, no, actually, this movie is a direct response to the LA riots that happened post OJ. Like this movie only exists as a kind of comment on that moment of time. And so, you know, it's not as sort of prescient and magnificent as I laid it out last week. But I also think it's kind of cool that this movie is kind of trying to comment on that in a way of like, it doesn't take much to get us to all hate each other.
That's right.
I think that's a really
just
kind
a little
of powerful,
bit, just a little bit, a trigger, as it were, perhaps the titular trigger effect.
What effect would that have? Let's find out.
Titular
in our film entitled It.
And then finally, again, spoilers, I think the movie does end on a very optimistic note. And that is something that is also fairly, that's not rare, actually. A lot of post-apocalyptic movies end optimistically. But I appreciated that I don't know if you remember the end, Jeff, but when I was watching it, I was like, man, Jeff would love this ending. You know what I'm talking about?
I remember liking the ending, but I don't remember what it was.
Basically, Dermot Mulroney gets shot in the road, and Kyle MacLachlan goes to some guy's house to beg to use his car. And the guy's like, I don't know you. Like, I can't just go handing out cars to whoever comes by and tells me some sob story. And they kind of end up at gunpoint with each other. But then Kyle MacLachlan says, like, takes the keys, and he's like, you know, I'm going to bring your car back. Like, you can trust me because I'm going to trust you. And then he hands the guy over his weapon, basically. And then the guy is so moved by that gesture that he's like, you know what? I'll drive you, Kyle MacLachlan. And so they drive him to save Dermot Mulroney's life. And it's like, really, you know, honestly, almost like a kind of Disclosure Day-esque, like, hey, everything's super, like, a very idealistic,
all you need is trust.
Way of looking at the world, right? Yeah. That Disclosure Day, which, without spoiling that movie, like, it has a very, like, old school idealist, idealism about humanity. But in today's day and age, I appreciated it. So, anyway, not, like, an amazing movie, but a good one, and has many cool scenes and things about it. So that's the trigger effect.
I'm really glad that you enjoyed that to a certain extent. This is a tiny little taste, as close as I may ever get to winning the Summer Movie Wager. I got Dave to watch a movie that I suggested.
Indeed. Savor it, Jeff.
Savor it. Beautiful moment.
Let's take one more break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more of what we've been watching right after this. All right, Devinder Hardware, bring us home. You got one other thing to mention, right?
Yeah, one thing to mention. I've been watching a new show called Jadugar, A Witch in Mongolia. This is an anime series. It's on Crunchyroll right now. And you may have seen like images or trailers or something from this because it has like a very striking animation style. It's kind of like doing what the manga did, but it's very un-anime. Just like the colors, the lining, the way characters are actually formed, it looks more like classical illustration than perhaps anime today. And this is a series about the historical figure known as Fatima, who was a Persian slave who became very influential in Mongolia. So it's like there's like a lot of layers of stuff going on here. But I also started watching this show with my daughter because I thought like, oh, this is historical. This is kind of interesting. And she was very interested in what we were seeing. You know, the first couple episodes are this character in like a Persian village in the 1200s or something. She was really interested in how people were living. But much like Grave of the Fireflies, it may look cute, but it gets brutal really quickly. So I would not recommend watching this show with your kids because it is ultimately about the cost of war, the violence invading armies can you know, inflict upon populations. The story is really interesting. I'm going to keep watching it on my own. I think the animation style is just so unique. It's animated by Science Saru, who are doing the new Ghost in the Shell series. So I'm really digging this. Like, it's visually lush. It is telling a really compelling story that is not typical for anime too. Like, this is a story about a Persian girl who becomes a major figure in Mongolia in, you know, in olden times. And it's just like the subject matter is so interesting. This is very much like, I don't know, different for anime in general and just a really unique work of art. So I'm going to keep watching it, but not with my daughter. I'll tell you that.
That's Jadugar, A Witch in Mongolia. And Devendra, where did you watch this again?
That is on Crunchyroll right now.
Very cool. Very cool. That is going to bring us to the end of what we've been watching this week. It's time for weekly plugs. We're going to do weekly plugs. Plugs. Weekly plugs, a part of the show each week where we plug something else we've been making. I've been really having a lot of fun editing decodingeverything.com, which is my free newsletter where you can get reviews of movies before they come out. This week we got Caroline Sita's review of Onslaught, which she had a great time with. I'm really looking forward to this movie. Check out the review. By the time you're listening to this, it'll be available at decodingeverything.com. Subscribe to the newsletter for free. Decodingeverything.com. Devinder Hardwar, your weekly plug.
Yeah, over at Engadget, check out my review of the Alienware 39 5K monitor. I'm an ultra-wide sicko. I like those monitors. They're a little wider than a typical widescreen. But I know you guys like the super ultra-wide, the ultra-ultra-wide, the like 49-inch sticking all the way out to the sides of your desks. I've got issues with those monitors. They're not tall enough for me. Like, the thing is, they're great if you're spreading out things to the side, but you're limited
That's
vertical
right.
space.
That's
now,
right.
What if you could get a vertical monitor or an ultra-wide monitor that has a little more space, a little more room for your eyes to breathe? For me, this thing, this is a 39-inch 5K monitor. It is, like, the best screen I've ever seen as a monitor. It's also, like, the sweet spot of everything I want. Vertical space, ultra-wide space, incredibly sharp. So check out my review. And if you have a good video card, maybe this will be a good monitor for you.
I'm just going to put this out there, guys. 5K.
5K.
Too many Ks. Too many Ks. Don't,
5K in a monitor,
don't
fine.
Don't need that many Ks. Don't
You've
need that
reached
many Ks.
Peak so K.
We're, Jeff, you're on the Samsung Odyssey Ultra Wide, right?
32.9 is my jam.
Right.
It's great, but low resolution.
It's 1440p. 1440p.
Yes.
And honestly, that is all my aging, decaying eyes need at this moment. I don't need 4K. I don't even need 4K at this distance. So
that's exactly where you need 4K. Your eyes are a foot or two away from the screen. You see the K's, unlike your TV.
I think, anyway, read my review. My resolution is higher than that.
No, it's like 52 something. If yeah. The vertical 52 by 20 is 1440. Something. Okay.
Let me double check.
If you're using the Samsung Odyssey 49-inch, it's 1440p.
The 1440 vertical.
Is the
yeah. Oh yeah, 5120 by 1440. Yeah, you're yes, right. Yeah,
that's right. So yeah. there is the 57-inch Samsung Odyssey that I've been
the 55-inch
Odyssey.
That
one is
which four.
Is, I think that one is closer to 4K.
That is normal 4K. Yeah, right? That's a garbage monitor. I've reviewed that as well. Anyway, sweet spot, folks. Sweet spot, vertical space, ultra wide space. I love this thing.
That's Devendra's review of the Alienware 39-inch 5K. Intriguing, Devendra. Intriguing. Here's a question, guys. Did you hear that Wile E. Coyote posted his plans to catch the Roadrunner on Reddit? Did you hear that Wile E. Coyote posted his plans to catch the Roadrunner on Reddit? Hmm. Jeff Cannata, what's your weekly plug?
I love that you repeat the setup. Yes, you're so welcome. Much. And I love it that you always repeat it in the same way.
Yeah.
It's very delightful.
You're welcome. You're
never
welcome.
Change, Dave.
thank you.
I do a video game podcast. It's called DLC, episode 667 this week with Jesse Vitelli. All about Gamescom. A huge week in video games. Huge week in video games. We had Gamescom in Germany with a bunch of game reveals. But also, we had the Netflix exclusive premiere of the Grand Theft Auto 6 deep dive.
Oh, yeah.
We talk about all that stuff. And more, including games we have been playing on DLC episode 667, which you can get at dlcpod.com or wherever you get podcasts. Check it out. It's always fun. We have a new guest every single week, and we have fun. We have fun over there talking video games.
So have you done Gamescom in person, Jeff?
I never have, no.
I hope you get to go because it is the best of what E3, the dream of E3 was, but also great environment and really new stuff. I love Gamescom as a thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little tough to get to Cologne.
It is.
But I would love to go someday. I really would, yeah.
Of course, I want to throw a shout out for patreon.com/filmpodcast, where you can sign up for ad-free episodes, early access episodes, and exclusive After Darks. We never want anyone to donate. If it in any way causes them financial hardship, you can always support us for free by leaving a star rating for us or wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate everyone who helps to support the show in any way. Patreon.com/filmpodcast. Let's get to our review of Coyote versus Acme.
Have you been horribly injured by a product made by the Acme Corporation?
It's not your fault. There's probably someone to blame.
Name of the case is Coyote versus Acme.
Wile E. Coyote. He is reckless. We all know who's responsible, and all of his injuries are self-inflicted.
You've been settling Acme cases for years.
I could probably get you $250 for that.
This is your opportunity to really show people what you're capable of.
These companies think they can do whatever they want. We're sick of it.
Acme, hack you!
Nothing is easy here.
When he edited it, he said, "Wow, I can't believe this blew up."
Wow.
Nice. Nice.
I like that one. Welcome to the Filmcast review of Coyote versus Acme. I'm going to read the plot summary of this film from IMDb. When Acme products fail him one too many times in his dogged pursuit of the Roadrunner, Wile E. Coyote decides to hire a down-on-his-luck lawyer to sue the corporation, end quote. Now, we've discussed the history of this film and how Warner Brothers tried to shelve this film permanently. It was rescued from the depths by a relatively new company called Ketchup Entertainment, woo, which purchased it for around, I think, $50 million. The original production budget was $70 million. They released it this weekend, and it made a little over $15 million, which makes it the most successful Ketchup Entertainment movie that has ever released. So huge congrats to them for not only getting a successful opening weekend, but also putting out a movie that a lot of people wanted to see that would have otherwise been killed. So this is kind of a win for everyone. All that
can they buy Batgirl next, please?
That would be great. All that said, How is the movie itself? We're going to talk about that right now. Let's start with Devendra Hardwar. What did you think of Coyote versus Acme?
I think this movie is perfect. I think this is a perfect way to bring Looney Tunes back to the modern world, a perfect way to introduce it to new audiences. Just listening to that trailer, too, makes me think of, like, my God, just so many things work well in this movie. But specifically, what works is that you've got great human co-stars who are treating these characters in this situation like perfectly well. Like, as that's what worked well about Roger Rabbit. Like, that movie is a technical marvel, but also you got Bob Hoskins there. You've got, like, people really leaning into the cartoonish, like the idea that cartoons are real. And this movie is doing the same thing. Will Forte, it's the Will Forte shtick, but it slots so well into Looney Tunes stuff, which is kind of amazing. And John Cena in this movie, he's not in this movie for very long, but his lines are perfect. But especially the trailer gave away part of this, but the I pay you to tah. That will never leave my head. That's just gonna live there permanently.
Utah.
Just incredible stuff. Like, this is such a perfect, like, the alchemy of classic Looney Tunes and modern sensibilities. I'll admit, I saw this movie via screener, but because I got to do that, my kids got to see it, and my daughter was she was like fully locked in. She thought the coyote antics were hilarious, like him trying to get the Roadrunner. There's a lot of nods to classic stuff here, but also like a lot of new things. I saw a really dumbass Blue Sky post last night saying, like, what kid would know what's up with Coyote, like Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner? I mean, a lot of kids, this stuff is easily accessible, but also it is a simple concept that the movie sells you right at the beginning. Coyote, once you throw a runner, go. Insanity happens. That's it. I freaking love this movie. I'm glad we got to see it, and I'm really glad it got a major theatrical release.
It's worth noting that these characters live in a world where cartoon characters are, it's just like a normal part of their life, right?
It's Roger Rabbit. Yeah,
Roger Rabbit. And I think Will Forte is particularly well equipped to kind of deal with that thing, normalize it in a really funny way.
It's like, Will Forte, what do you have to do to work alongside cartoons? Absolutely nothing, actually. Yeah. Just be Will Forte.
Jeff Cannata, your thoughts on Coyote versus Acme?
Well, Dave, I guess you could say my thoughts on Coyote versus Acme are best summed up in the form of a limerick.
Let's hear it, Jeff.
In depicting an entire Toon Town, Roger Rabbit may still have the crown, but what Acme tries means this concept still flies like a toon who never looks down.
Love it. Nice.
I love this movie. I love this movie. I love this movie. It's kind of sad that it took this many decades for someone else to try this. And even sadder that we almost didn't get to see this movie.
Yeah.
Because the notion of two-dimensional, not 3D animated cartoons existing alongside real humans right off the top is just something I adore. Just the pure notion of that and the execution of that. And it's awesome to see, you know, I talked about Roger Rabbit actually pretty recently, having shown it to my kids just a few months ago. So I had revisited it pretty recently, and it's wild to see that concept approached with today's technology, right? Because in the 80s, when Roger Rabbit was made, movies were made a lot differently, you know, than they are now. And the fact that you could kind of do the same thing with today's technology, but there's a lot of stuff in this that is still wonderfully practical, wonderfully tactile, wonderfully, when a toon interacts with a real live object in this movie, it never ceases to delight me. And there's a lot of it. There's a lot of it. And it's wonderful. I mean, I grew up watching these cartoons. I grew up with all these characters. There's lots and lots of wonderful cameos of classic characters, Porky Pig and others. It's just a delight to have this world exist. And you guys know I'm a huge Will Forte fan. Mm-hmm. I will watch anything he's in. He's, as you have said, he's great in this. And, there are wonderful, wacky hijinks that constantly happen. There's some great set piece moments that really lean into the cartooning of it all. And putting a live actor, a live action Will Forte into the cartoon context is very fun and very well done, I thought. I also like the fact that they didn't cop out and have Wile E. Coyote speak. Like when this movie started,
They're going to butcher the whole lore of Coyote, and
it's going to be Bradley Cooper as Wile E. Coyote's voice. Here we go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. They're going to just, because how could you not?
Right.
And this movie,
he's a co-lead in the film.
Exactly.
So it's like, yeah.
How do you even do it? This movie figures out a brilliant way to do it, sticks to their guns, are true to these characters and their history. Beautiful. And man, we'll get to it in spoilers, but I thought the ending of this movie was awesome. It was pitch perfect. And, I don't want to spoil even the slightest bit of it, but it resonated and it made me go, kind of see why they didn't want people to see this movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like this movie actually has something interesting to say about capitalism. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was beautiful. I hope this movie has a huge life. And I think when it hits streaming, even more people are going to like it. I think it will work for kids. I haven't seen it with my kids yet. I really want to, cause I was out of town all weekend, but, I celebrate this movie. It's a triumph. It is the most unlikely of things that we actually got to see it. It actually, something good actually happened.
Right.
This thing was plucked out of the garbage can and we got to all watch it and enjoy it. And everything that people said about it in those days, when we were all hearing like how great it was, boy, it lived up to that hype for me.
This movie is, in a way, my Avengers Endgame.
You can't keep doing this with every movie that brings in more than one character.
Well, I mean this because I have been watching Roadrunner cartoons my whole life. Yeah. I remember distinctly my mom saying to me, like, I have snatches of memories of my mom saying, hey, like, I remember her saying to a friend or someone like, hey, David really loves those Roadrunner cartoons. Like that was like my favorite character. And those are my favorite elements of the Looney Tunes, right? It was like, I would love watching Roadrunner. I thought the Roadrunner character design was so cool. And obviously Wile E. Coyote so funny with all the little experiments that he's doing. Watching this movie is like, I don't know if you guys remember this. There was this like fan casting theory online once of like, hey guys, there's going to be a new James Bond, and you're going to find out that actually all the James Bonds that we've seen exist on one timeline, right? Uh-huh. And the 007 is just like a name that everyone borrows. And then Sean Connery is going to be the villain of the new one. And he's going to, and he's going to be like, the James Bond, the 007 program betrayed me, blah, blah, blah. It's like, imagine finding out like all the stuff that you've been watching until that point all like fit together as part of this grand universe, right? That's what this movie does to the Roadrunner cartoons, right? It's like all the stuff that Wile E. Coyote went through, those were just like one-offs that he forgot about. Like those were all part of the same timeline. And and the cumulative tonnage of all of those experiences have led him to this point where he's really sick and tired of Acme stuff blowing up on him, and he needs to do something about
There's such a great sequence at the beginning where they literally show the old cartoons.
Yep.
So I'm like, this is so my dream is coming true, right?
I love that they didn't remake those or do it in a different way. They literally just show you the actual stuff that you saw as a kid right in front of you. That's the proof that this has all happened. That's beautiful.
It's also, it took me a long time. It wasn't until I was in my like 20s when I realized how old those cartoons were, right? Yeah. Like as kids, like all of us, we were watching cartoons from the 50s. I did not, that did not clock with me, but still they put some stuff up on YouTube. I've been watching it with my daughter too. it just works. Like, this is pure physical comedy. You don't even need words, right? You can kind of get what they're doing.
This
movie builds on that so well. It is the spirit of the old cartoons, kind of like taken to its logical conclusion.
Yeah, cutting a hole out of a bridge and the entire rest of the bridge falls.
That just
works. That will always work. Like,
timeless.
That's pure. Timeless. It's pure, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I loved that it's like, hey, honoring the lore of Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner, and then obviously like taking it and building an additional, even more ambitious layer of lore around that with, we're in this place where people sue Acme all the time. Like, there's a guy who's the cartoon equivalent of an ambulance chaser. If you've been injured by Acme, he'll like get you a settlement and so on. But then he encounters a case that isn't going to go away so easily. And that's what the movie ends up being about. But I thought the movie was just continuously inventive. It honors your love of these characters. It honors like all the experiences you've had watching these characters. And manages to have not only a decent arc for the main character played by Will Forte, but also obviously a fairly compelling, as Jeff alluded to, anti-corporate message. So this movie is, if not a home run, a solid triple. Really had a great time with it. And just on a pure visual level, as you guys have already discussed, one of the, this joins Who Framed Roger Rabbit as, years from now, we'll be looking back at this and being like, wow, I can't believe they were able to achieve this blending of animation with live action. Like that.
Also, Space Jam, I guess, is in there, but I don't like Space Jam.
No, it isn't.
it's part of it. There's Space
certainly
Jam, and then there's...
Space Jam 2, okay? Let's just
certainly not Space Jam
out.
2. There's also Cool World, which I think is what really killed this whole concept, honestly.
So I really, really like this one, and I think... if you're a fan of Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote, it is a absolute must watch. And if you're not, I think it still does enough to like bring people in and help you understand what's going on. So had a great time with Coyote versus Acme. And thank goodness we got to see it on the big screen. All right, let's do spoilers for this movie.
I thought up an ending for my book.
It makes no damn sense.
Compels me, though.
I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end.
When I buy a new book, I always read the last page first. That way, in case I die before I finish, I know how it ends.
You can't handle the truth!
Inconceivable!
I came here to tell you how it's going to begin.
All right, let's talk about spoilers for this movie. Guys, I gotta say, one of my favorite parts of the movie, right at the very end, when they're interpreting his beep beeps. By the way, they are beeps, FYI.
They are beeps.
They're not meeps. This has been clarified in the canon. When they're doing the interpretation and he's like, you know, when are you coming back? Or are you coming back? And it's like, these two characters need each other.
They're like Batman and the Joker.
They're Batman and the Joker. You complete me. And that's, I don't think that has ever been acknowledged really, right? In the lore, right? It's just been them doing their own thing like this. Or maybe it has been. I apologize if I've missed that.
I don't think not to this extent.
Not to this extent. And there's that something,
it's the perfect line. The perfect line. When are you coming back?
Right.
There's a million ways you can express that idea.
Right.
That line is the best way.
Not you. It's not you complete me. It's not
I miss
you.
It's when are you coming back?
Yeah. Yes. That there's something
beautiful,
about me
perfect.
That needs
yes.
you.
Yes.
And
because you always come back. Because you always try again.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's something, I love that. I mean, is it kind of like, it's really taking the relationship in new directions.
It's very retconning the thing.
Right.
But to a beautiful end that I thought was earned.
But it's like, it's. I think it only works because the characters are so old. Like, do you know what I mean? If this is like a new set of characters, it wouldn't make sense. But like, because this rivalry has been going on for decades, right? It's like, there's something to iron sharpens iron. There's something to us that makes sense together. So anyway, I love that part. Jeff, you wanted to talk about like the sort of anti-corporate message. Tell us about what you felt.
First of all, I love that Foghorn Leghorn is the CEO of Acme. I'm like, it's just so perfect, you know?
Yeah.
I'll say boy. I love that he doesn't win the case. I love that he doesn't win the case. That mm-hmm. what happens is the panel crushes it. No, sorry. Unanimous vote led by Elmer Fudd to squash this. Oh, we lost, but it starts something else. Like, that is so perfect. It's so beautiful because a lot of times a movie like this will just be like, we did it. We won the case against all odds. It's like, no. That's not how this shit works. That's not how the structure of the, even in Toontown or wherever we happen to be, that's not how it's going to work. The powers that be are not going to let you do this. And yet there's still this element of hope at the end. I just thought that was beautiful. It really is about fighting the man and not backing down and not taking your measly $250 to fuck off. You know, it is actually standing up and doing the hard thing. And the fact that it's Wile E. Coyote who mm-hmm. is doing that is.
I mean, who else knows more about trying again and failing? It's a perfect fitting. Yeah.
Totally agree. And the movie makes that explicit, right? It is mm-hmm. a beautiful message of, you know, when Will Forte's character recognizes that and says it, like, you know, I used to think this guy was pathetic. And they both, you know, obviously Will Forte's character is Wile E. Coyote in his own way, right? It's impossible to, he'll never catch, you know, the John Cena's of the world. He'll never live up to that, but it's about trying. Mm-hmm. It's about not giving up. It's about showing up every single day.
Well, it's beautiful. He's such a loser that the Wile E. Coyote looks like a winner compared to Will Forte's character, right? Yeah. He doesn't even try to get the Roadrunner. He's just like, okay, I'll take, oh, you left a feather. I'll subsist on this. I don't have any self respect for myself. Coyote knows what he wants and he spends every day going for it, no matter how often he fails. That's a lesson, kids.
Yeah,
it really reframes Coyote in kind of quasi-heroic mm-hmm. terms. Now, it turns out it's all part of some act to actually, sure, like, he's sure. using all these people. But gotta say, Project Sisyphus, guys, pretty dark.
Dark.
Very pretty dark stuff, right?
Well, so it's no darker than the Dip from Roger Rabbit.
You can't beat the Dip. You can't beat
the Dip. Dip is pretty dark.
But the idea, for those who don't know, is that Project Sisyphus is this Acme program whereby they purposefully sold faulty technology to cartoons so that these products could be tested on them, so that they could then be improved for humans. Now, does that actually make any sense? I don't know.
But it doesn't, but well, I mean, we've for decades, major corporations have been testing products on animals.
Right.
You could argue that the way we enjoy many modern products today is by harming people from other places, from the third world, the people manufacturing in China too. Like, it's, you can draw those parallels and be like, huh, that actually sounds pretty familiar, honestly.
Yeah, for sure. I certainly it felt mm-hmm. consistent. Mm-hmm. I'm curious what you guys think of.
Before we move on, I just want to say, I guess I thought that was like a fairly clever way of explaining why all the products are faulty. Like, why would they sell all these faulty products to Wile E. Coyote? Like, oh, there's this big explanation behind it.
Yeah.
It's because they're using them as test subjects.
But also turning Acme into the Apple of the modern world is kind mm-hmm. of funny. It's just like, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeff, what were you going to say?
I was going to pivot and say, I'm curious what you guys think of how Bugs Bunny is positioned in this movie.
Kind of like the Deep Throat-esque
Deep Throat,
right?
But also like this kind of this force that hovers above everything else and mm-hmm. is more powerful than you could possibly imagine. You know, that like Bugs Bunny.
He's the smoking man in the X-Files. He's everything. It's just like, but that's the way to handle it, right? Because if you put too much Bugs in, Bugs takes over. Bugs rules everything, right? He is the center of gravity. Got to get a little Bugs. Let somebody else take the stage.
Totally agree.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on Coyote versus Acme, guys?
I mean, it's so smart how it weaves in. Like, I think for newcomers into this, right? I've watched a lot of cartoons with my daughter, but my son, who's 4 years old, has not seen as many, but he got it. Like, this movie does a great job of just like framing how this world works and how these characters work. It was also a great way to introduce the random other Looney Tunes characters to my kids. Like, my son, when he has tantrums, he sounds exactly like Taz. And now I could be like, you're like Taz. And he understands, like, wait a minute, why do I sound like that? Because he does that. So, like, yeah, there's a lot of things. It's a great way to
just stealth wanted to explain to say to his son, stop sounding like Taz and for
stop
him to
sounding
get it.
Like the Tasmanian devil. But yeah. No, that's what he sounds like.
Yeah. Were they cool with the fairly protracted third act courtroom ending?
My daughter, I mean, they check in and out of these things, but my daughter was totally down with it, and she thought it was very sweet how Coyote and Acme were friends.
Which is like Coyote and Roadrunner, you mean?
Yeah, Coyote and Roadrunner, yeah.
Yeah. Jeff, is this a movie you'd show to your kids? Like, what do you think?
100%. I intend to. Yeah. I just didn't have the logistical ability to do so before we talked about it. But I was hoping to be able to watch it. I've been gone for 4 days. I was running Hood to Coast again this year. I would love my kids to see this. I think they'd have a blast with it.
Very cool. Well, we had a great time with Coyote versus Acme. It's something you should watch in theaters if you can, or on video demand when it is available. And at the end of the day, it is really impressive that Dave Green made a movie and got it released.
Yeah,
especially with everything that happened to this one. Congratulations to everyone involved. That's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of The Filmcast. You can find more episodes of the show at thefilmcast.com. Email us at /filmcast@gmail.com. Our theme song comes from Tim McCune from The Midnight. Our spoiler bumper and weekly plugs music comes from Noah Ross, who also edited this episode with video assistance provided by Kurt Mega and John Barry. Next week on the podcast, it's a reckoning, folks. It's Labor Day is the end of the summer movie wager. And, you know, I'm not 100% sure on this, but I'm pretty sure by the time next week happens, we're going to know who the winner is.
If only there were ways to track this.
We're going to be able to crown who the winner of the summer movie wager is. We will find out and be able to record our episode discussing the summer movie wager results. So stay tuned for that. It should be a lot of fun. Until then, they are Devendra Hardwar and Jeff Cannata. I'm David Chen. You've been listening to The Filmcast. And we'll see you later. Goodbye.